Coming up this week on the Course of Life podcast, it was the John Deere Classic and the Postman delivered for another win on tour. Plus, we had the second Live Golf Tour event and the first one in the U.S. and some more reaction from the other tours around the world as well. Plus, part six of our book club chat on the new scandalous Phil Mickelson book. It's getting pretty juicy. We tune into all that and everything we're tuned into outside the world of sports, including The Dropout and a throwback movie. This week's guest, we have a golf artist and friend of the show who's been on before, back on the show, Linda Hartog, talking all things artwork and her historical courses and renditions that she has done paintings of, including Augusta, and next week's host of the Open, St. Andrews. Plus, it's hot dogs and diner food, and we always end with food, all of it brought to you by our friends at Desert Fox Golf, makers of the Phone Caddy. Desert Fox Golf is the website to check out. DesertFoxGolf.com. Promo code Course of Life gets you 10% off your phone caddy. What the phone caddy does is it keeps your phone safe and in position exactly where you need it to be seen and heard and located at all times while you're playing golf. It straps right onto the pole of your golf cart and it allows you to easily take the phone in and out, access scores, yardage apps, everything you need to keep yourself in tune on the golf course and dialed in. It's the Desert Fox phone caddy. DesertFoxGolf.com, promo code Course of Life to save 10% off your phone caddy today.
Hello, interwebs, and welcome to Course of Life, part of the Morning Read Podcast Network. We are proud to be presented by our friends at Desert Fox Golf, Swing Strong, and D3 Golf. I'm Michael, he's Alex. And Alex, it was a light field at the John Deere Classic, but it was a wire-to-wire win as the postman delivers. JT Poston winning it wire-to-wire, never looked back. It's pretty impressive from this kid, don't you think?
It was. I mean, it started right out of the gate, going low, flirting with a score in the 50s on Thursday, and pretty much took it from there. Like you said, it wasn't the strongest field in the world. Poston, probably one of the higher-ranked players in the field at the time at JDC, and conquered TPC Deer Run very impressively, rolling in the putts he needed to late. Held off a few of my picks. I had three guys all in the top 10 for my Run Your Pool article and our picks on Twitter that we love to do every Wednesday. I had Christian Bezidho and Scott Stallings and Maverick McNealy, who all finished in the top 10. So an impressive team performance there, but couldn't find the W. And it was Poston, like you said, wire to wire, get it done real easily.
Yeah, and so that means he gets a whole lot of good things, including getting to play in St. Andrews for the Open in a couple weeks. So exciting time to win, and now have to try to scramble to get flights to head over across the pond for that.
Always a good problem to have, right? When you got to do the scramble flight, like, oh, yep, by the way, I'm suddenly playing in this much more awesome tournament. So shout out to Poston for that. And he was pretty emotional after he won. Got a little teary-eyed just kind of saying, you know, he'd been to the winner's circle before. But he was definitely wondering, because it had been a few years, you know, would he get back? You don't know if you're just a guy that only wins once on the PGA Tour. That's something you have to find out and conquer for yourself. So he was able to definitely hop over that hurdle, and it was an impressive win for Poston.
We touched on this last week, too, that while the John Deere Classic was there and it was a light field and it was the PGA Tour event, it was not where the eyeballs were going to be this week, because the LIV event had all the star power, since everyone else was taking time to go over for the Scottish Open this next weekend. So instead, we got to watch all the new guys in their press conference be combative, as we expect these days. We got to see Dustin Johnson momentarily have the lead and then not do anything with it. We got to see Brendan Grace take home a chunk of money.
Oh, yeah. I mean, everyone did. Everyone took home chunks of money. Yes. Just his was much bigger than the others. So shout out to Grace for it. And yeah, it was interesting because a lot of people were talking just in golf online communities about where everyone's eyeballs would be. You know, admittedly, this was maybe the first time, you know, things didn't quite stack up as well for Live Event 1 a few weeks back. Because you remember we had that amazing JT Rory Canadian Open duel against it. Now, head-to-head this past week, you know, admittedly, my eyes were a little bit more tuned in Thursday to Saturday to the Live Tour, just because there wasn't a lot of star power there at the John Deere Classic. So people were tuned in. Like you said, the new names were what we were watching for. Pat Perez had the pleasure of shooting 80 on the final round, making $150,000 for finishing at the bottom of the pack. But don't worry, Mike. He made $750,000 because his team won overall. So he walked away basically a millionaire in his first week on the LIV Tour. And then that's the type of windfalls these guys are having early and often.
Yeah. And I particularly liked Pat Perez's shirt that he had, what was it, Wednesday evening, with just dollar bills all over it. So, you know.
This is our thing, we know where we stand against how we feel about the foundation and where the LIV Tour is built. But our current stance emotionally is, listen, if you're going to go to LIV Tour, just be honest and forthright with us and just say it's for the money. Just like Justin Thomas said this past week, we share that opinion. And I at least appreciate Pat Perez and Dustin Johnson and their candor. I think everyone else, frankly, is being a little too scaredy cat about the whole thing. Those are the only two guys that have been real honest about it, though.
Yeah, and just again, it's an exhibition. We said it time and time again. This is an exhibition.
Yes.
That's what we need to call it. What's really interesting is what I've been seeing a lot on Twitter too about the LIV Tour is how a lot of these guys are saying they're playing in this so they can play less golf and have a better, you know, work life balance for lack of a better term. Maybe but they need to play 10 events next year. They need to play 14 the year after, and guys on average play about 20 during the course of the season. So, and they're going to get to a point where they're going to have to play more events because of the requirement that the LIV Tour is putting on them.
Yeah, and I think those contracts on the LIV Tour are a little bit more stringent than what's going down on the PGA Tour.
Yeah, so, you know, I think their whole argument around wanting to go there around that part, not wanting to say it's about the money. Just tell me it's about the money. Do what DJ did and just say, like, look at my face. This is great.
Can I tell you something just to step outside of kind of our little mini stratosphere within the golf community? Because you and I are in the trenches with it every week. But just kind of stepping out, you know, a lot of people online think that the eyeballs are on LIV Tour. One issue that did come up is the LIV Tour did recognize that they do need a TV deal in the near future, and that's something they are working on for that visibility. Because frankly, Mike, I asked a lot of people over the age of 40 or over the age of 50 if they're tuned into the LIV Tour at all, and the answer is hell no. No, there's a lot of people that just aren't going to take the time to go find and stream golf on a weekday afternoon, yep. You know, based on the LIV Tour's in a schedule and when they can operate for 4 hours of golf coverage. So just keep that little perspective, and that in our little stratosphere, the LIV Tour is blowing up right now, but in the main general scheme of things, there's still a lot more people out there.
I also found it interesting. There was an article posted on the Morning Read this past week about a survey that was done, and they found that younger golf fans are more likely to be paying attention to the LIV Tour and open to it than older golf fans, which I found particularly interesting because you think of the younger generation being more aware of where things are coming from and where money is coming from, at least
yeah,
for me.
Or just maybe kind of socioeconomic things and what's going on in the world, generally speaking.
Yeah. The woke mob, as some people like to say, is typically you think of the younger progressives that are out there. So it was interesting to see a lot of the younger people in this survey were saying they didn't care where the money came from and they would watch this tour. And the older generation was saying, no, they're not going to watch this tour. They haven't heard of it, or they don't know. They don't want to hear about it. Okay. So
that's where things stand. Right.
Yeah. We also heard about this week, there was an article that went up about how close the DP World Tour almost came to partnering with LIV Golf.
Oh, man, Mike, you know that would have broken my heart. That would have sent me into pieces. I have a very soft spot. And I know you do over the years here doing this podcast for the DP World Tour, our wonderful European, Asian, African, worldwide destinations and the cool names that have risen from the ranks there. That would have been a bit of a stab to the back if that had actually come to fruition.
Yeah, it sounded like LIV Golf or the public investment fund at the time was willing to pump a lot of money into the DP World Tour. At that time, they were still the European Tour. And I guess it just kind of fell apart because, it, you know, one thing or another, it just didn't get to the members to even really talk about it. And it was determined that it just wasn't really the best thing for them.
Yeah.
But it seems like this was really hinged on like one or two people maybe making this decision.
And a massive W for Jay Monahan, like when he really needed it. He really needed to keep that alliance strong, and he did. It's funny, there's some articles out about a mysterious Malta meeting of all the commissioners as well, too. Yeah. You can kind of find on your own time. There's a lot of stuff out there right now, but some very James Bond-like moments here as Golf's Elite get together to figure out the future of the game and its competition format. So nonetheless, the DP World Tour did align themselves with the PGA Tour even further. One other cool thing that got mentioned in the last week is that the top 10 guys on the DP World Tour, just in general at the end of every year, they're going to get PGA Tour cards, which is freaking awesome, because that's going to get a lot of shine for up-and-coming European players who have that great year. Guess what? It's like an instant promotion for them. It gives them the ability to not only keep playing in Europe, but they have the opportunity to prove themselves on the biggest stage as well. So I thought that was a nice add as well.
Yeah, that's really cool. And they're going to be giving out cards at Q School as well, which is great. So they're really pumping it to make it a little easier to get on tour, to try to really, you could say, compete with LIV Golf and kind of make that that pipeline flow a little easier up to the PGA Tour.
Hey, I mean, yeah, again, we keep saying it, like, for better or for worse, we don't know what this future is with LIV Golf, but one thing it's doing is it is provoking change. And there are some cool changes that we've seen come and that have benefited PGA Tour fans and golf fans alike. So if that keeps coming, then let it be.
Let's look ahead to this weekend. It is my favorite event of the year, Alex. It's the Barbasol Championship.
Oh, yeah, you're a big shaver. You're a big razor guy.
Shave all the time. I've never used Barbasol shaving cream, but, you know, if I did, I would be all in on it. But no, it's really going to get overshadowed this weekend by the Scottish Open, which is now a PGA Tour event. It's going to get FedEx Cup points. It's sanctioned. Everyone's headed over there to play. We already know JT is over there. Jordan Spieth is over there. Ricky Fowler is over there. So, you know, big names are going to be there and playing. No big names at the Barbasol at all, really.
Yeah, I know. This is the split event. This is what happens when you get the split event. And especially, like you mentioned, you know, the Scottish Open had been just a trendy, you know, oh yeah, some guys go over a week in advance, get their game links ready. It's gone from that to, everyone goes over a week early. That's now just the common practice. So like you said, all the best are there for the Scottish Open.
Yep. Also, Tiger Woods is playing golf this week.
Not great. I don't know what you saw. We're recording before Tuesday's round. Monday wasn't fantastic, but he's just ironing the kinks out. I mean, listen, the swing looks semi back. There is still that hobble. We keep analyzing that hobble, but I think that might just be there forever. That's just Tiger's new normal, and the way he's going to walk from day to day, depending on how he feels. So let the overanalyzation begin. The plan right now, as we drop the episode, is that he's planning on giving it a go at St. Andrews next week. So we're all eyes and ears tuned that way.
All right. Early odds on Tiger making the cut. What do you think?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, sadly, I think it's probably around even money for him to make the cut. Like, I don't think it's that much of a guarantee. I really don't. It could even be plus money. We'll have to see as the next week or so progresses. Obviously, there's going to be a ton of bias. It's St. Andrews. It's a flat course. You just got to realize that he's not getting a lot of reps. And I think even he knows that from a tournament perspective. He's not getting a ton of reps like he used to.
Mm-hmm.
So the expectations have to be tempered, even at a course that he loves and has so much winning and familiarity on.
And what I'd say is that if it's wind is whipping and it gets cold, he's not going to last. He's not. We saw that already. So if it's cold and he can't rehab that leg quickly at the end of every round, then he may make the weekend, but he won't play the full weekend.
Listen, I hate to call out Tiger Woods' age, but you know, like, he's 46 here. Okay. Going on 47. Yeah. This is an old man injury now that he's dealing with, you know, like, he can't have weather at all affecting his leg or legs for that matter. He needs 65 and sunny, like you mentioned.
Yeah. So we'll have our picks out on Wednesday. We'll be picking the Scottish Open because that's where the guys are.
I was three in the top 10 this past week on Twitter. I'm at Course of Life 1. You're at MWRNC. You've knocked a couple wins recently. So you've had your wins. I've been flirting around the winner's circle recently. This feels like a due week for one of us.
All right. We'll see what happens. We'll have our picks up on Twitter on Wednesday. For now, let's switch over and talk about Phil, that book by Alan Shipnuck. It just gets juicier and juicier. We read chapters 14, 15, and 16 this week. And once again, we got to see every chapter gives you flips of different sides of Phil.
Many sides of Phil, right?
Yeah. And on chapter 14, we got to see that Phil's really just a child in an adult's body.
He is, yes. At the very uber famous, ultra exclusives only Yellowstone Club, like the home of Tom Brady and the rich and the millionaires and the famous and all that. Mm-hmm. He's there playing as the only adult in a children's dodgeball game. And he said he took quite pleasure in doing it. So, yes, you know, beneath the rough exterior and all the fancy dancy presentation from Phil, he really is just a kid that wants to compete and win at heart.
Yeah, we know time and time again, and we see this through these three chapters, his competitiveness just is leaps and bounds above maybe other people, or his competitiveness and at the same time his desire to draw the best out of people and their competitiveness.
Just win everything. Win a round, win a bet, win an argument, win a fight, win a theory, you know, just anything. He's just looking for wins all the time.
Yeah, yeah. We also talked about the 2013 British Open.
Yeah, I would say maybe one of the surprise Phil Major that nobody saw coming. Mm-hmm. You know, in your mind, when we were younger, you know, even seeing Phil finally don those green jackets and the PGA, I you know, we wondered, could he do the U.S. Open? Maybe. I never really saw a world where he was going to win a British Open because he just didn't contend a lot when you and I were growing up. So this one was definitely a surprise indeed.
Yeah, his game was never right. He was all about, you know, the flop shot and the money shot. And yes, he changed his game to win at Augusta and take those shots out. It's still always interesting to see someone who's not used to playing in a lot of wind and is used to hitting high shots and those kind of saves to be able to win at a British, because you just never think of that.
It took a different Phil for that win. And that is what I'll grant him this. You do see a lot of signs of maturity as his career progresses. He does at points, not always, take the advice of others who tell him to play a more conservative approach, hit more half wedges, flight the ball appropriately when needed. And those listening points led to wins like the 2013 British Open.
Yep. When we got to chapter 15, it was really all about the Ryder Cup, because Phil is kind of, you know, was always seemed to be this heart and soul of the Ryder Cup team. And we really got to see how big of an influence he was on the other guys in the field and really bringing them up and giving them tips and pointers on how to play. And how much he seemed to thrive off team golf environments.
He did, yeah. And I mean, the biggest feather in his cap with the Ryder Cup, I think, was 08, when he got Anthony Kim to play amazing. That young group of guys just absolutely romped the field, the European team that year. But outside of that, he had a very checkered history in team play and Ryder Cups, and that came to fruition a lot, too. It all came to a head when he butted heads with Tom Watson at the 2014 Ryder Cup. Watson was a distant caddy that took no player appeal or thought or consideration into any of his moves or lineup cards. And Phil hated that. And the explosive press conference that we know very well, where they just openly barbed each other, became an instant viral golf moment in 2014. So it was fun to go down that memory lane and all of the encounters through Ryder Cup days from Phil.
Yeah. And we also saw, you know, leading up to this as well, we saw Phil was never really afraid to speak his mind about what he thought about the leadership in the tour, or in this case, in the Ryder Cup, and what needed to change and what he thought was best. And you know, I'm sure that this moment and the influence he was able to have after voicing his opinion about Tom Watson in front of Tom Watson in the press in a press conference, and then being able to help shape Ryder Cups for the future, and being part of that kind of confab of players and past coaches that were able to make it happen, helped influence his maybe confidence to say something just last year about the PGA Tour and LIV Golf. So
yeah, I mean, he could take some credit, because things did turn around after 2014 for the Ryder Cup and got us all the way to where we were at Whistling Straits with the absolute blowout win for Team US. So the task force was created after that. You know, that we made fun of that the first couple times around, but it eventually reaped its benefits in the end. So Phil, a little bit of a precursor to what was to come for Team USA Ryder Cup.
Yep. He also liked to, at practices for Ryder Cups and practices for other majors and events, he liked to have some money games, and he demands everybody pays.
I mean, I guess now in the Venmo age, I think that's a lot easier to do. But like, I had a hard time clarifying, did he really want like cash on hand? I hope we're doing electronic transfers, because he was demanding the money immediately, from what I understood.
Yeah. Yeah, Jimmy Walker didn't pay for numerous opportunities, said he was going to pay and never paid. Yeah. So
We all know that guy out there, if you're listening.
Did he have the money, or do you think he just kept forgetting?
Yes, creatively. And then, so after that, Phil basically just became the commissioner of his own money games and decided that Jimmy Walker was suspended until he did decide to play. So Phil is the judge, jury, and executioner, as they say. One of the other victims of the money games, my buddy, Keegan Bradley, man. Just, you know, the friendship with Phil, the Keegan Bradley form, turned out to be a very expensive one because Phil just kept taking his money in all these games. And eventually Keegan had to take a little sabbatical before he eventually returned to the gambling with Phil. But definitely lost some zeros in his bank account, thanks to Mr. Mickelson.
That indeed. We also got to find out in chapter 16, of course, if we all remember the problems with insider trading that Phil had, and that he had some dubious connections and was getting some potential insider trading tips and everything that was going on. But thankfully, Phil has a lot of money and he was able to just make it go away.
It was. I mean, that's essentially the moral of that story, because I always kind of forget the end of that story. Yeah, Phil, the whole insider trading. How did that end? Well, I mean, he just made it go away with money. Basically, the nuts and bolts of it for anyone who doesn't know is basically Phil was talking to CEO A of Company A, who was saying that Company A is going to do something really important that's going to change the value of our company extremely soon. So go ahead and put stock in us. Phil would then do it and reap the benefits of it. That's insider trading and insider tips receiving. It's very illegal. And so we got caught up in that firestorm, but never really fully in a legal way got caught up in the firestorm. His name just being mentioned a lot. And like you said, made it disappear by just out of the goodness of his heart, gave some money back, even though he was totally not guilty. He decided to give the money back, right? Totally not guilty.
Pretty much. There also seemed to be some sort of legal luck going on at the time as well, which won't get into all the minutiae there, but really it's you got to read the book to really get the full details of what happened here. But it really draws into question how much Phil followed the rules
in lots of aspects of life. Yeah.
But hey, we're gonna finish the book next week. We're gonna read the final three chapters of Phil by Alan Shipnuck. Now is your chance to get in here and finish it up with us and let us know what you think. Tweet at us, tell us what you think of the book, and we'll wrap it up next week.
Absolutely, and I can tell you with some level of confidence, we're making the right connects to make sure we get the author on at some point, so we can get the full debriefing to have Alan set the record straight on all of our questions. So if you haven't checked out Phil by now, check out a copy of the book. Again, I got it right here. I'm looking at it right now. Phil, The Rip-Roaring Unauthorized Biography of Golf's Most Colorful Superstar by Alan Shipnuck. Check it out before we wrap it up next week.
Let's switch over to Tuned In, where we share what we're tuning into outside of the world of sports. You know, I watched this weekend a classic romantic comedy that I have never seen before.
Oh, boy. Wow, a classic rom-com. Okay, what was it?
Yeah. Notting Hill.
Oh, whoa. There's a big time throwback movie vibe. I would have taken me a few hundred movies to guess that for sure.
Yeah, I know. You know, this was in terms of rom-coms and where I'm ranking rom-coms, because I think a lot of people would say this is certainly top three.
Yeah, hold some standard in terms of classic rom-com status. I don't know much about the movie, although I do know it's Hugh Grant, Julia Roberts, right?
Yeah, exactly. Hugh Grant, yeah. Julia Roberts, Hugh Bonneville, I'm blanking on the popular British TV show that has now had two movies made with it. Hugh Bonneville is in. You know exactly what I'm talking about, Alex. You know what it is.
I wish I could help you.
So
right
does
now.
Anybody else.
This is why I'm tuned in and you're not.
Everyone else knows Hugh Bonneville is very young. I mean, Julia Roberts and Hugh Grant are incredibly young in here. This movie was out in like 99. But this is fantastic romantic comedy, kind of flips everything on its head a little bit. And of course, it's where we get the infamous line, "I'm just a girl standing in front of a boy asking him to love her."
That is an iconic line. I feel like that's been reiterated in some sort of like recent pop song. It sounds vaguely familiar. And by the way, Hugh Bonneville, Downton Abbey. There you go.
Thank you. There you go.
You're welcome.
We pay attention to what's going on in the world, obviously.
And that's why we have a segment called Tuned In. So on that note, what I was tuned into this past week is I actually did something that you know I'm not very good at, is I actually did a full series 8-episode binge all in one week, which is which is like, I mean, like, I need to give myself a standing ovation. I'm so proud. I rarely make it through series this fast, but I got through The Dropout, the series featuring Elizabeth Holmes and her biomedical company, Theranos, which was all just one gigantic fraud. And there were some excellent cameos as well, too. Mike, William H. Macy, great role. Jackie from Roseanne, blanking on her name, but love her to death. She had a fantastic role in it as well, too. And Stu from The Big Bang Theory as well was one of the whistleblowers that came to fruition in the series. So great series, very compelling story. I'd encourage everyone to check out The Dropout.
All right, let's get into this week's guest. Alex, we've got our favorite golf landscape artist back on the show. That's Linda Hartog, and she's here because, you know, she's painted St. Andrews, the home of the Open Championship, in 2 weeks.
Yeah, we're here. I mean, it's Scottish Open week. Next week's the Open. So let's do it. Let's get in that Lynx Golf vibe. And Linda has a lot of really cool experiences being in St. Andrews. We talk about the little things. What's it like being in the town and painting the town and the village and the people there? And her experiences with Augusta National are endless. Really cool conversation with a returning guest coming to the show.
We'll have that conversation in just a moment. But first, let's talk about our favorite on-course betting app and the official on-course betting app of Course of Life. And that, of course, is D3. Dollar, dollar, dollar. I played my half of the match this weekend, Alex, and I had the round of my life. So I don't know if you're going to be able to beat me or not.
Exciting. I love it. You went low. You had some highlights. What was going on? Any birds out there on the card?
I started with a par. I had a chip and birdie on 8. Oh. I had a I don't get to say this very often, a disappointing par on 9. A 3-putt par. I reached the green in 2 on this par 5.
Oh, look at you. The
standards are going right here. 3-putt for par. Okay. And then I started 10 and 11 with pars. So, you know, I was playing some great golf out there.
Yeah, I got my work cut out for me. And the neat part about the D3 matches is every course is comparable, and D3 and their software does that for you. So they match up course handicaps, difficulty, slope rating, and everything that you need to factor into the match to make sure it's an evenly scored one. So me and Mike have had many matches already, and we encourage you guys to check out D3. Our promo code is COL when you join and download the app. Be sure to find us on there. You can find Course of Life Alex. You can find Michael himself on there. You can challenge us at any course you want. It's on. We're ready to play you on the D3 golf app today. Next up on the tee, back on the show, we love having our favorite talents from the world of golf join us. This week we have our world-renowned golf landscape artist, Linda Hartog, joining the Course of Life. Linda, good to hear from you again. How are things?
Hi, Alex. Everything is great here. Thanks.
Awesome. Yeah, checking in. It's good to connect with you. We last spoke in the summer, fall of 2021. For anyone who wants to check the archives for that conversation, where we introduced our audience to everything that you do. You're our go-to Hall of Fame artist. I love saying that. It's a great title. And you've had paintings commissioned by Augusta National and major championships around the world. I guess just catch us up with current commissions that you're working on.
Right now I'm working on mostly I'm doing private commissions now for clubs and individuals. So I'm doing one of Pebble Beach for a private individual, and I got another one coming up after that, and possibly one of in Ireland coming up. And also I just found out recently, I kind of suspected it, but that really tragic fire at Oakland Hills did burn up the painting I had done for him.
I was going to ask about that. Yeah, kind of a sad story in the world of golf. The famous clubhouse at Oakland Hills in Michigan did burn down. It was a very old historic building in the game. And so unfortunately, your painting was a victim, it sounds like.
Yeah, apparently. I kind of figured it was, but it took a while for them to contact me. And they do want me to to paint another one, so that's good. That'll be coming up.
That's nice. So how does that work basically when you're going back and redoing a piece? I know this is a unique scenario for you. Or are you going to look for maybe a different aspect of 16, a different part of the course altogether? Or are you going to kind of do as close to recreation of the previous work?
I think they want a recreation. And I still have all the original photographs from, and that was, you know, for the 20s, what was it? The 1996 US Open. So it goes back a ways, but I still have the pictures that I worked from. And, you know, of course I have a print so I can see the painting pretty clearly what I did do.
Got it. Very cool. And I'm curious, well, when you do these individual commissions, say someone out there is interested in a commission for one of their favorite holes or courses, how does the process typically work? And what are your most popular requests of certain holes or courses? And what do you notice?
It kind of depends. But if it's for an individual, a lot of times it is the most famous holes. I get quite a few requests from Augusta members. And but then there's always just individual clubs. I did one for Seminole. I did one for Jupiter Hills for their 50th anniversary. I did one for Glenview for their, they had a Western Open there last year. So, you know, it just depends. They may have something they want to commemorate.
Nice. I'm going to take a wild guess on that Pebble Beach commission that they're either asking you to paint the 18th hole or the par 3 7th. Which one is it?
18.
Of course. I mean, those are the two icons of that course. What's your favorite part about that setting, the 18th at Pebble Beach?
Oh, just the panorama is just incredible.
And yeah.
I like it from the back of the green because the front of the green, it's, you know, it's not that defined what you're really looking at. But from the back of the green, it's pretty impressive.
Yeah, the waves and chopping against the bay and the beach and the rocks. It's quite a setting indeed.
It's got everything.
Again, we're joined by Linda Hartog. It's hartog.com, hartoug.com. People can sign up and receive email correspondence from you, updates on your landscapes as well. The one thing that I really do appreciate that you do are your Guess the Winner contests now. People can guess the winner of an upcoming tournament. To win a print. Very cool. And so we've actually got this in effect for the upcoming Open Championship. Is that right?
Oh, absolutely. Especially the majors. But we do, you know, quite a few of them. They're really popular and they're just fun. You know, it's just fun to see all the people that respond and they try so hard to win. And a lot of times it's some, you know, a tournament wins and you have like a real major player, so you have a whole lot of people that guess that one person and you have to draw from them, but it's pretty fun. We really enjoy doing that.
I'll have to report back for the last second official picks, but I'm going to put one name out there that I don't think anyone's put in for the Open Championship, which is Davis Riley. So I'm going to claim my stake to him being the underdog champion, and hopefully that print could be all mine if he wins. I'm curious, what are some of the more random guesses you get for picking the winner over the course of the years?
Oh, it can be just about anybody, but mostly people stick to the major people. I mean, they're really trying to win.
Yeah, definitely. It's going to be a great Open indeed. Obviously, anniversary Open. And this is the home of golf. This isn't any other Open Championship. This is being done at the old course at St. Andrews, a place that I know is very special to your heart. Yeah. Tell me a little bit about your experience with the home of golf, maybe the first time you set foot there.
Wow. Well, I first went there in 1988, and that was when I first started doing visiting some of the courses in Scotland. That was my first trip over there, and I had gone into business with Bob Pringle of Old Troon Sporting Antiques, and so after I had photographed Royal Troon, he sort of took me on a tour of Scotland and ended up in St. Andrews and put me in a bed and breakfast and left me there for a week. So I had a really good chance to just explore the course and the town and you know, all the little nooks and crannies in St. Andrews, and it was a wonderful experience.
Now, I would love to hear a little bit more about the town. We talked a lot about the course specifically in our last chat, but I think what's been highlighted a lot on broadcasting years recently is the expansion of the town and everything St. Andrews as a town has to offer. Now, you did mention it's a bit of a task painting the town in addition to the 18th hole, but I guess putting that bias aside, what are your favorite parts of the town, St. Andrews itself?
Oh, gosh. I think all the little alleyways and I just sort of, just by exploration, discovered their botanical gardens, and it just has such wonderful character there. You just can't go wrong anywhere you go.
Yeah.
And when Bob came to pick me up after my week there, he was a member of the RNA, so, and he knew the night watchman, so I got a midnight tour of the RNA building.
Oh, very cool. A lot of history there, I bet.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, I saw all the trophies and the paintings and all the different rooms. And that was really, really nice to do that. I mean, and unusual because, of course, back then women weren't allowed anywhere near that club. So.
Interesting. Let's talk a little bit about the actual painting of courses that's like St. Andrews versus other venues you painted before. Just to kind of go behind the scenes a little bit, painting, you know, there are hill aspects to St. Andrews, but it's more so a flatter, simplistic, old school layout of a course. When you compare it to maybe a mountainous rolling hill course with waterfalls and mountainsides, how does the different architecture of the course play into how you create work?
Well, I think I love the whole course, and I love the holes on you know, that aren't by the town, but they're not as popular, unfortunately.
Right.
I did manage to do the 14th and 4th green with the Hell Bunker, which I really love that painting. But everyone wants to sit down there where they see the whole town behind. So it's quite a challenge to paint that whole town every time you do one of those paintings. It takes a lot of patience, and yeah, it's very meticulous. You have to make it just right. You know, it's not like a tree where if the branch isn't in the right place, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, people know that backdrop too. I mean, I can picture the buildings right now, not even looking at them behind the 18th green.
Well, it's so unique in all courses to have something like that. You know, to be right in you feel like you're in the center of the town when you come up the 18th there, and it's just very, very unique and special. You know, I can see why everybody wants that. And
very
of course,
cool.
Swilkin Bridge, you know. That's like, you can't beat that either.
Oh, yeah. Everyone stops on 18 for the famous photo. It's an iconic setting, and I can't wait for everyone to see it all week here at St. Andrews. It's going to be very special, and those are cool experiences from yourself. Linda, I'm curious, one bonus question on St. Andrews. You just said you did the Hell Bunker. Obviously, pot bunkers are going to be on big display this week. Talk to me, what's the key to painting a good bunker feature, especially a one with the depth at St. Andrews?
Oh, well, the ones I've done is the 17th hole show, you know, the road hole bunker. And it's like anything, any other detail. Of course, anytime I photograph a hole to paint, it's the light makes all the difference in the world. The lighting to me is what makes it exciting for me to do, and also puts the drama in the painting. So once you find that, it will describe whatever it is I've picked pretty darn well. And it's basically, that's it. I'd say you just have to find the right lighting, and then it becomes exciting and dramatic.
Nice. Great tip indeed. I love that. Looking forward to all the Open Championship coverage. One story I do want to share with you, Linda, is since we last spoke, I got to make my first trip to Augusta National. I went to the Masters this past tournament's playing, and finally got to walk the grounds, a place you know extremely well. For those who don't know, quite literally your first commission was at Augusta National. Refresh everyone and tell everyone about your experience at Augusta National and what makes that place so special to you.
Yeah, I went there the first time in 1984 because the pros at Augusta had seen my landscapes and they liked them so much. They said, can you do a golf course? And I said, well, sure. So I went there and I did the 13th hole for the first time. I've actually painted it about five times. And that started it. I, you know, at that time I had not done prints. It was the first golf course I ever did. And after the 85 Masters, where we sold some prints that they had made, I had other clubs calling me right away. I did two paintings for the country club for the 1988 U.S. Open.
And just saw that great course on display as well, yeah. Too.
Yeah, I've been there a few times. And then Lake Nona called, and then I got in contact with Bob Pringle, and then he got me the commission to do the Open Championship Series for the RNA, and then also he got me the commission to do the U.S. Open Series. So basically, you know, I haven't painted a whole lot of anything but golf courses since 88. And,
very cool.
Yeah, and I'm fine with that. I've enjoyed it very much. Enjoy the people, love the game. It couldn't be better, really.
You should be. And that spot on 13 that you mentioned, Augusta, definitely one of the most iconic images from my day there. I can still close my eyes and picture exactly what it looked like. My mind was buzzing that day, but I did think about you and your landscapes for just a moment because I was seeing the painting come to life, and it's a truly special place. I guess the one question I have for you is, everyone knows that's the favorite corner on the course. What's maybe your second favorite corner or second favorite spot on Augusta?
Well, I've done quite a lot of paintings of the main courses, the main holes, like 10, 11, 12, 13. Did one of 15 and 16. And I've done a couple of 18. I really like 18. And then I did a few of the first nine. I did the 4, 6, and 8 for Master's Gift.
Yeah, 6 was very unique. One of the more unique spots on the course for anyone who ever gets the Masters, being able to see 6 and watch the hole and also look down to the right and see 16 and 17. It's a very unique corner on the course that definitely probably gets overlooked a little bit.
It does. I think most people are just familiar with the pretty much the back nine and the major holes in the back nine. But that number 6, you know, you see 16 right behind it. And it's just a really cool scene, looking up the hill there, seeing 16 behind it back to back. I really like that scene. But again, it's just not that popular. Usually when they want a print, they want something, you know, that's what everybody wants.
Oh, yeah. They want the icons. Play the hits, as they say, right?
Yeah. But for private commissions, I'll do a lot of different holes sometimes.
Very cool. Again, it's Linda Hartog joining us, hartog.com. Tell everyone what they'll find on the website if they're interested in taking a look at more of your work or possibly even hiring you for a commission as well.
Yeah, there's a whole lot there, really. There's under the studio tab, you can actually see a work in progress from start to finish, which a lot of people ask me about that. And so
we very neat.
Work in progress. And there's also a tab there that says art show, which shows a whole lot of the paintings that aren't necessarily in the shop, you know, some private commissions and things. So you see many more paintings. And, you know, there's just a lot on the website. So hopefully spend some time on it.
Definitely. And I'd love for you to show quickly what you do with the Academy of Golf Art. You're a leader in encouraging golfers, golf lovers from all walks of life to recognize that art is a great way to commemorate the game. I love having golf artwork, and it's a great way for me to think about my fondness of the game. But just tell everyone what you're doing with the Academy to help really grow the game in your own way.
Yeah, we started the Academy in 2003, and that really came out of Golf Digest sponsoring a couple of actually golf art fairs at Pinehurst, where they invited all the different golf artists to come and exhibit. And of course, once we all got together, we decided, you know, we really need to form some kind of organization. And so it grew out of that. But the purpose was really to kind of establish golf art as a viable genre in the world of fine art, which has kind of been overlooked, unfortunately. Sports art has never really got that much recognition, and especially golf art for some reason.
Which is interesting for as beautiful as golf courses are. You'd think there'd be kind of a little bit more respect there, you know?
Well, I would have thought so, but it was like kind of a wall. So I thought this was another reason. And then also it was to attract really good artists who maybe were known in another genre who really liked golf to create images of golf. Because, I mean, there's a lot of artists that like and play the game. So it gives them an outlet to show. And it also connects you to collectors. So that was the whole idea.
Awesome.
Yeah, we've got kind of an association with the Morris Museum of Art in Augusta, Georgia. And we've had some shows there, and we hope to have some more in the future if the economy ever recovers.
Yeah, definitely. And I hope next time I make it back to Augusta, I can check that out too.
Yeah.
Lovely. Linda, we love to finish with our 19th hole question. We're going to re-ask it to you close to a year later, since you are a recurring guest now. And we'll see if the answer changes at all. But when you get in after a long day working on the golf course and you get into your favorite clubhouse, what's your go-to 19th hole order?
Oh, gosh, it's still the same. I like oysters to start. And then a ribeye or a tenderloin. And maybe a Patron silver.
Yep, still as luxurious as ever, Linda. The only thing that changed was the steak from a filet mignon to a ribeye or tenderloin. So otherwise, yeah. Everything else is intact.
Okay.
Linda, thank you so much for hopping on the Course of Life. Great to hear the update on everything you're doing. Excited to... have everyone tune into Open Championship Week and admire St. Andrews in all its beauty, and check out your artwork as well.
Yes, it's going to be so much fun. And our contest is going to be really interesting. We're going to have a lot of people in that contest this time.
Yeah, I'm trying to win that artwork. Love it. Thanks again, Linda. Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you. You take care.
And we're back. Great to hear from Linda there. And just how difficult it is to paint a town when you're used to doing golf landscapes. And now with St. Andrews, you have to paint the town.
Yeah, I mean, that's a unique one. I can't quite say. There's a lot of settings in golf. And I'm trying to run through my brain right now how many times there's an entire town behind the 18th hole. If anyone knows of a course where that exists outside of St. Andrews, I'd love to see it. Send me some pictures on Twitter at CourseLife1 or you're at MWRINC. I'm all about the unique backdrops on the 18th hole as well. It's a big, big fan of it.
And if you like that conversation with Linda, plus everything else we do here on the podcast, do give us a rating on the podcast app of your choice. Subscribe. We're on whatever you're listening to us. We're there. We're on Apple, Spotify, iHeartRadio, YouTube. We're kind of everywhere. So go ahead and punch that subscribe button. Leave us a review. Let us know how we're doing. For now, though, let's hashtag always end with food.
Yeah, let's do it. It's a big one, too. Brought to you by our friends at Swing Strong. Time to ditch the traditional sports and energy drinks. Save time, money, stay dialed in through 18 holes with Swing Strong. It's a unique hydration pack that I used when I played last weekend, Mike. And it's got that wonderful taste of lemon-lime Gatorade. It's full of flavor, and it gives you the hydration you need. I just wasn't feeling thirsty, and that's exactly what you got to do with Swing Strong. So if you want to stay hydrated, check out GetSwingStrong.com. Yeah, it was July 4th in the rearview mirror now. So obviously, we got to talk about all the goings on at the Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Contest, the annual slobber fest on Coney Island. Mike, it was an interesting one. I don't know how much you saw going in, but Joey Chestnut was dealing with an injury. He was dealing with heat, and he had to even deal with a protester as well on his way to getting his 15th win.
Yeah, it looks like he might have broken somebody's neck in the middle of shoving hot dogs in his face. And through all this, he's still, once again, the champion reigns supreme. You can throw whatever you want at him. It seems like he can still unhinge his jaw and just shove everything down the throat without needing to swallow. So
yeah, it's absurd. It's
crazy.
This was an off day by all counts, too. So he was coming in with a ruptured tendon in one of his legs. So he was full limp, full crutches. We didn't know how that affects his adrenaline or his energy levels. And then on top of that, it was 85 degrees, sunny and humid, with the sun shining down his face. That doesn't help the digestive system. And then we have a random crazy kamikaze protest. And Joey Chestnut goes into full kung fu mode in the middle of the competition, basically neutralizes this protester in about 1.5 seconds, and then proceeds to eat 63 hot dogs and get another win. This guy really does it all on July 4th, I guess.
I mean, my question is, when is he going to retire? Because no one's going to beat him until he retires. I don't know how you cheat in a hot dog eating contest, but I think Joey Chestnut might be cheating. Because yeah, this is unheard of what he's doing.
15 wins for him. It was 8 in a row, then 7 in a row, or 7 in a row, then 8 in a row, regardless. Yeah, he's the GOAT indeed. It's his crown until he decides to walk away. And shout out to Miki Sudo as well, too, for dominating the female competition. Coming back after having a kid and her 7 in a row to get number 8 for herself. So it was a hot dog-filled July 4th for me. I also posted some nice hot dog pictures at Always End With Food Pod on Instagram as well, if you want to take a look at my hot dog creations on the floor.
Alex, last week we talked about greasy food.
Yes.
As you remember.
Yep, the greasy food.
I want to talk about diner food, which is greasy as well. You know, greasy spoon and a diner kind of go hand in hand. Went to a diner for breakfast on Sunday, and you know it's a good diner when they have, you know, your typical breakfast diner food, but they've got a patty melt, which is classic diner fare, and they've got a Monte Cristo, also classic diner fare. So this was all right, good, and just, you know, went all out, just decided to go with pancakes because I was just feeling the pancake vibe. It's been a while since I've just had a stack of pancakes.
No, I respect that. Shout out to the breakfast sandwiches as well, too. But yeah, let me go ahead and just walk you through the conversation, though. For the classic order, how do you like your eggs?
Scrambled.
Bacon or sausage?
You know, I go back and forth on this. First of all, never a patty, so it's got to be links. And then it's coin toss whether it's going to be sausage or bacon.
Sir, I'm your server. I'm not here to have a conversation. I just want to ask if bacon or sausage.
Let's go with bacon today.
And home fries or hash browns?
Hash browns. They're shredded, right? Shredded hash browns?
Yeah, and then white wheat or rye toast?
Rye.
Okay, there it is.
Like, but, you know, if you're in the South, you also get a biscuit thrown in there as an option.
Yeah, so I was then wondering if I was going that direction. I just want to get the bread answer for me there. But, yeah, good old and shout out to the Monte Cristo as well, too, the forgotten breakfast sandwich.
Mm-hmm, indeed.
Love it. That was another great episode of The Course of Life. For Michael, I'm Alex. Thank you all for tuning in. Be sure to subscribe right now, and we'll see you next week.